Okay, I'm reading from Luke 18, from verse 9 to verse 14. It's on page 1057 of the Church Bible. Luke 18, starting at verse 9. He also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous, and treated others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, prayed thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week, I give tithes of all that I get. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted.
Well, good afternoon. Hello, it's good to see you all. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Matt Thompson. And I'm one of the associate ministers here at Central. It's really good to add my welcome to that of Pete. It's really good to see so many happy faces, even though you're not on holiday, unlike so many others of our church family. Well, we're going to be looking at this parable that we've just had read. And if you've already shut your Bibles, it'd be really good if you could reopen them. Page 1057 of the Church Bibles. Because then you can just follow what I'm saying and making sure that I'm not making anything up. That'd be really good. We're used to having to present ourselves in the best possible light, aren't we? And we're regularly told that we must have confidence in our own ability. So as we put ourselves forward for jobs or for university places or for hands of marriage, we try our very best to put our best side forward, don't we? Pointing out our good points. Those things that we're confident about so that we might be accepted or so that we might achieve our goals. Take, for example, a guy called Hugh Gallagher. You may have come across his application form for New York University going around on the email circulation. And this is his genuine answer to a question in a personal statement of, you know, what would you add to your application that we may allow you to join New York University. This is what he said to the Board of Admissions. I am a dynamic figure, often seen scaling walls and crushing ice. I have been known to remodel train stations on my lunch breaks, making them more efficient in the area of heat retention. I translate ethnic slurs for Cuban refugees. I write award-winning operas. I manage time efficiently. Occasionally, I tread water for 3 days in a row. I woo women with my sensuous and godlike trombone playing. I can pilot bicycles up severe inclines with unflogging speed. And I can cook 30-minute brownies in 20 minutes. When I'm bored, I build large suspension bridges in my yard. On Wednesdays after school, I repair electrical appliances free of charge. I'm an abstract artist, a concrete analyst, and a ruthless bookie. Critics worldwide swoon over my original line of corduroy evening wear. I don't perspire. I'm a private citizen, yet I receive fan mail. I can hurl tennis rackets at small moving objects with deadly accuracy. I once read Paradise Lost, Moby Dick, and David Copperfield in one day, and still had time to refurbish an entire dining room that evening. I know the exact location of every food item in the supermarket, and I've performed several covert operations for the CIA. I sleep once a week. When I do sleep, I sleep in a chair. While on vacation in Canada, I successfully negotiated with a group of terrorists who had seized a small bakery. The laws of physics do not apply to me. I balance, I weave, I dodge, I frolic, and my bills are all paid. Years ago, I discovered the meaning of life, but I forgot to write it down. I have won bullfights in San Juan, cliff diving competitions in Sri Lanka, and spelling bees at the Kremlin. I have played Hamlet and performed open heart surgery, and have spoken with Elvis. But I have not yet gone to college. Talk about selling yourself with confidence. I've no idea whether or not he got into New York University. Perhaps he was going for a creative writing course, who knows? But I like to think that perhaps he did. And as we come today to the next of Jesus' parables in our series, then we come across two men, a Pharisee and a tax collector. And both of them are stood at the temple before God in prayer. And essentially they're presenting themselves to God. Through their prayers, they're pitching for his acceptance. But as you know from our previous parables, if you've been there the last few weeks, Jesus actually has a knack of surprising us with the punchline to his stories, doesn't he? So often teaching us the last thing that we would expect. So however familiar you are with this little story, and it is a familiar parable, I think that its punchline will keep challenging each of us, whether we're a Christian here tonight or not, when it comes to our relationship with God. So let's take a look, firstly, at these two characters and see what this parable has to teach us. And I think that actually, if we're to understand it properly, then we just need to take some time out to correct perhaps one or two misconceptions when it comes to these characters. So firstly, let's just think a little bit about the Pharisee. Because Pharisees, if we're honest, often come out of Bible talks in a bad light, don't they? If you've been around Christian things for any length of time, then it may be that you have subconsciously slipped into the mindset that Pharisees are like the pantomime baddie of the Bible. Whenever they appear, it's time to boo them off the stage. And it's true that actually the Bible often does paint the Pharisees in a bad light. Usually that's down to their response to Jesus and who he is. But for us, living in Sheffield 2,000 years after this story was first told, there's a danger that we can misunderstand how those that Jesus first told this story to would have seen the Pharisees. You see, for them, the Pharisees were society's respectable boys. If you were a young, single Jewish girl and you brought a Pharisee home to meet your parents for the first time, you'd be married before you could even say congratulations. You see, the Pharisees were the religious elite of the day. They would help the vulnerable and the weak of society. And they were really, really, really respected and well liked. The people of first century Jerusalem and the surrounding area were concerned. The Pharisees are certainly no pantomime baddie. They'd never have been booed. But if you want a first century baddie, well, look no further than the tax collector. Here you have a Jew who is a Roman sympathiser. The Romans were the hated occupying force in Jerusalem, yet the tax collector worked for them. Not only that, but the tax collector had a reputation for skimming extra taxes and putting them in his own pocket. If the Pharisees were respected and well liked, well, the tax collectors were hated and thought of as society's lowest of the low. And it's these two polarised characters that Jesus accurately presents in his parable, as they stand in the temple presenting themselves to God. So it should come as no surprise, really, that the Pharisee begins his prayer in verse 11. And as he does that, we see that he has an amazing character portfolio to present to God. So verse 11 tells us that the Pharisee was an upright member of society. He's not an extortioner, or unjust, or an adulterer. And more than that, this man was awesome when it came to his religious practice. So verse 12, that he fasted twice a week. And that was going way beyond the call of Jewish religious law, which demanded one fast a year, never mind two a week. And similarly, he doesn't only tithe the crops that again were necessary to fill the letter of the law. No, we're told that actually he tithes all that he gets. This is an upright, well-to-do religious man. He's the man that you and I would have loved to have been mates with, if not aspire to have been just like him. He's the man that every church would want in their church. So he's the church's top financial giver. He'd always be at the last of the Thursday of the month prayer meeting. He'd be involved heavily in any and all ministry areas. And if he walked in here today, then all of us would be jumping on him to welcome him in. Hey, come on, we want you in our church family. The tax collector, though, again, fills his stereotype. So, as we read through it, there's nothing he can say before God. There's no achievement or success he can present that could earn him any favour with his God. So much so, verse 13, he feels the need to stand far off. He's the guy who's sneaking in at the back. He wants to be there, but he's ashamed of what God and others might think. He can't even bring himself to symbolically look up to heaven as he prays. This is a man fully aware of his unworthiness in this situation. And so he cries out to God, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. He's the guy that actually, if he were to walk in now, we'd all eye rather suspiciously, checking that there was nothing stealable lying around. And so really, when you think about it, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? Who's going to be the one who's acceptable to God? Who's the one that's going to be considered righteous? Well, it's got to be the Pharisee, hasn't it? Clearly, God's going to choose the upright, respectable, religious member of society who we would all love. It's common sense. It's just simply a no-brainer. But in reality, once again, Jesus turns the tables on our expectations. So verse 14, I tell you this man, and he's talking here not about the Pharisee, but about the tax collector. I tell you this man went down to his house justified, rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. It is the tax collector who is justified. It is the tax collector who is received by God as sinless. Imagine your surprise if you're a first century follower of Jesus listening in here. Jesus is teaching some radical expectation changing stuff, isn't he? And really, I guess it's no less radical today, is it? Because we still live in a world that considers the good and the upright to win favour with God. Those that are good and well behaved, the polite, the respectable, to be sure of being welcomed into heaven. If we were to go out onto the streets of Sheffield today and ask people what we need to do to be right with God, then I reckon, and I'm being generous here, but I reckon that 90% of people, I reckon it's probably a lot higher, would tell us that we need to be a nice, good, honest, respectable person. Perhaps somebody who actually just balances the scales. You know, they do just slightly more good than they do bad. Most people think that the Pharisee would win hands down against the tax collector. It's the no-brainer. Most people, that is, except Jesus. So what's going on in this parable? What is Jesus trying to teach us? Is that being good is just a waste of time? Oh no, I don't think it's that. I think that Jesus is wanting his listener to see two things from this story. And firstly, there's a warning. And the warning is the danger of self-reliance. Be warned about the danger of self-reliance. So look at verse 9, where Luke, the author of this book, really actually gives us the purpose and meaning of the parable right from the off. So it says, he also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt. This parable is meant as a warning to those who are self-reliant when it comes to getting right with God. Relying on himself is exactly what the Pharisee was doing, wasn't it? Look again at his prayer. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. Talk about self-love. Even before he comes to listing the religious achievements, he's comparing himself to others, looking for that one-upmanship. He might as well be saying, hey God, if you want to relate to someone, why look anywhere else? Here I am. I am the perfect specimen of the human race, top of the leaderboard. But Jesus says there in verse 14 that actually the characteristic that God is looking for isn't one of self-achievement, self-love and pride, but rather it's one of humility. And humility in this case is actually, as we'll see more later on, a recognition of your status before the living, awesome Creator God. I mean, in reality, the Pharisee wasn't that far off telling God that he was his equal, was he? Hey, look at me, I'm the daddy. Unlike in our worldly situation where self-reliance and achievement are good things, when it comes to a right relationship with God, God wants us to humbly recognise how far we are from His perfect standards. That even at our best, we're nowhere near being God. I mean, this parable reveals that even the great Pharisee isn't as perfect as he'd have us believe. After all, how can verse 9 and verse 11, treating others with self-righteous contempt as he does, be considered pleasing to a righteous, loving, just God? This is the heart of a man who really just worshipped himself. And so really, this story of the Pharisee comes as a warning to each of us, I think. In, as I said, a world that tells that achievement will be rewarded, this comes as a totally countercultural lesson. But it's a lesson we must all hear, so let me sum it up for you. When it comes to being in relationship with God, God is not interested in your spiritual CV. And God does not have a leaderboard that you have to some way work your way up. It doesn't work like that. We've got to get out of the mindset that if you're to be right with God, you must achieve it yourself. Ticking off that spiritual checklist. Thinking that you've got to be the best prayer, the best Bible study leader, or the most regular and helpful member of the setup team here on a Sunday. Or that you must be above everyone else when it comes to your moral standards. So as a Christian, you definitely mustn't smoke, drink, swear, that you must give to charity, help the disadvantaged, fight for the planet, not speed in your car, or turn a blind eye to the office antics, or mug old ladies. Now yes, God might like you to do or not do those things for other reasons. But if you're doing them to earn favour with him, when it comes to your friendship with him and a place in heaven, then Jesus here says, forget it. And think about it. I mean, if the Pharisee, and get this right, the Pharisee was the cream of the crop. I mean, when it came to moral uprightness and when it came to religious practice, he was unbeatable. But if he failed to impress God with his CV, then in the cold light of day, you and I, well, I don't want to speak for you, but I know I have no chance. Now, for many of you, this won't be a new lesson. We've just spent the whole of last term looking at the letter to the Galatians, a letter that teaches at its core that we're made right with God only as we have faith in Jesus. But nevertheless, it's a message that we must be constantly reminded of, is it not? After all, if we are honest with ourselves, even in the light of what we know from Galatians, do we not continue to secretly compare ourselves with others? Placing ourselves on the moral and spiritual leaderboard? Treating others, verse 9, with contempt? And that can happen, I guess, at each end of our perceived leaderboard, can't it? So there might be some here today who feel that if there was a scale, they'd be somewhere perhaps near the bottom. That they could never stand before God. There may be people here with hidden guilt. How could God accept me after what I've done? There may be others who just feel that in a church like this, with so many talented, seemingly upright and good and religious people who get involved in leading ministries, who read their Bibles every day and pray in public, that actually you'd be the last person in this room who God would want to know. You are that person who's sneaking in at the back, just not sure whether you're worthy enough to be here. Well, Jesus says, stop comparing yourself to others. Because it's not about what you do. And then there's the other side of the perceived scale, isn't there? So how many of us have found that when in Gamma Team we hear one of our members who's struggling with sin? Yes, we're concerned. Yes, of course, we want to help and support them in it. But then on reflection, when we get in the car on the way home, there's just that little small part of us that is pleased that we're not like them. That little piece of self-congratulation kicks in. Perhaps we're just that a little bit higher, the next rung of God's leaderboard. Or when we're on welcome duty here at church and someone comes in who perhaps doesn't fit, if there is one, the Christchurch Central mould. Is there perhaps a subconscious relief that we're that little bit more? That really God, with his obviously middle-class outlook on life, is bound to choose us over them? Or what about when we say of our non-Christian friends, well, they could never become Christians because they're too far away. You know, have you seen how they live their life? They could never become Christians. Does that not just assume that relationship with God is only for the respectable, sinless people like you and me? It's complete rubbish, isn't it? Because in reality, when we inspect the inner workings of our hearts, when we're truly honest with ourselves, none of us are respectable, are we? None of us are going to make it even close to the top of a leaderboard. As I said, the Pharisee's heart, I mean, he was the cream of the crop, yet even his heart was filled with pride, contempt and pride. And the real danger is, I think, that if you and I start to rank ourselves in God's leaderboard, if we begin to rely on our own moral and religious ability, proud that we're better than others, even if we're not at the top of the list, you know, we're getting up that way, well, then we've begun to take our eyes off the teaching of Galatians, haven't we? And actually, the teaching of the whole Bible, really. The good news that Jesus came to bring, that he really is the only person worth trusting to get us into heaven. We must heed the warning of this parable. And I guess that kind of brings me to my second point, really. The second thing that Jesus wants his listener to understand, and that is the result of a humble heart. The result of a humble heart. You see, or the reward of a humble heart. You see, for some of you, it will be no surprise that Jesus is teaching what he's teaching. I've already said it won't be new to many of you. However, for others, what Jesus is saying seems to make no sense. I mean, if the religious and moral elite can't make it into God's good books and ultimately into heaven, it begs the question, doesn't it? Who on earth can? Who is going to make the grade? It seems to leave us with very little hope, doesn't it? We'll enter the tax collector back into the story again. Here is a man who, as we've said, in worldly terms, will simply never make the grade. So why is it that Jesus tells us he's the one who went home justified? He's the one who both now and into eternity has a right standing and friendship with God. Well, firstly, I think it's because he had a right, humble and honest view of himself. You see, the tax collector knew his position before a perfect God. He knew that his life simply wouldn't cut it. Unlike the Pharisee, in the tax collector's prayer, there is no list of achievements and there's no self-pride. No, instead, there seems just to be a sorrow and shame. Remember, this is a man who wouldn't come close to the front of the temple nor look up to heaven. He knows, as he cries out to God in verse 13, that he is a sinner. He knows that he's rejected God, his creator. Do you see the contrast with the Pharisee, who could only see what he was doing right, but whose pride and contempt reveal a heart that was more about himself than it was about God? Me, 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 look at what I can do. No, the tax collector understood that he'd been living his life outside of reference to God, his creator, and as such, he'd made a mess. He understood that he could never make the perfect standards of a perfect God, and so he came before God to humbly ask for God's help. And not only did the tax collector have a right, humble, honest view of himself, he also had a right and humble view of God. He knew that God is a God of kindness and mercy. After all, why ask God for mercy in verse 13 if you don't expect that perhaps he can deliver? God, you see, has already set up at this point a system of sacrifice for the Jewish people to be forgiven for their sin. And here is the tax collector who knew before God he was a sinner. And so he stood before his God and in essence he said, God, there really is nothing I can do to win your favour. All I can do is stand before you honestly accepting that I've lived my life without reference to you and begging for your mercy. Forgive and accept me. And I'm asking because I know that it's your character. I know that you're a merciful God. And Jesus tells in verse 14 that he was forgiven, justified. So if the Pharisee can't win God's favour, what hope is there for us? Well, the hope is tied up in God. The hope is God's mercy, isn't it? Each of us needs to heed the warning of Jesus' parable and stop trusting in our own abilities. Stop trying to make the grade. Instead, Let's humbly ask ourselves, can we ever measure up to God's perfect standards? Where in our lives, actually, have we failed to live with God as God? And it's not nice on our pride, is it, to consider ourselves as sinners? Especially, actually, if on the surface we're seen as the respectable, nice people. You know, if in the world's terms we're the good guys, it's very difficult to be honest with ourselves and consider ourselves as sinners. But sin is life lived outside of reference with God. You see, you can be as respectable as a Pharisee, but as we've seen, we can still live a messed up, proud life that says me, 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 and not God, God, God. And is that the point of the parable? Forget your pride. Jesus tells us here that actually it's only as we inspect ourselves, turn back to trusting in God and relying on his mercy, that we'll ever make the heavenly grade. And his mercy, just incidentally, is shown ultimately in sending Jesus to die in our place, is it not? As he took the punishment that we deserve. Unlike in the world we live, where self-sufficient pride is the key for success, in the kingdom of God it's a humble heart which leads to heavenly exaltation. And when you realise that making God's grade is actually all about humbly accepting your sin, casting yourself upon God's mercy, then actually, does it not just come as a huge relief? For those of us here who are carrying guilt from the past, or who know our lives would never measure up, those of us who just aren't the religious elite, even those of us who are but know in our deep hearts that we're just a mess, for those of us who do feel closer to the tax collector than the Pharisee in this story, well, there's hope, isn't there? There's no exam to pass, no leaderboard to climb. Because of God's mercy, you can be accepted by God. And all you must do is humbly cry out to him. If that's you here today, if you've been someone who's been trying to make the grade, but who knows, deep down you simply can't, well, why not quietly pray the tax collector's prayer now? God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And know that because of Jesus' death on the cross, taking the punishment you and I deserve for our sin, God can and God will honour your prayer. What about those of us who've already turned to ask for God's mercy? Those of us who are Christians? Well, this passage comes as a reminder to it, that we mustn't stop taking our eyes off Jesus' rescue, off the mercy of our God. I actually think that it's one of the devil's best tricks, conning us into thinking that actually we're not really that bad, that God would be pleased with us, as he gets us to compare ourselves with others and think that actually our spiritual CV would make the grade. Yeah, God would be alright, God would like me, I'll get in. Well, the next time we're tempted to think about like that, the next time that our pride wells up in us and that we favourably compare our spiritual and moral selves with others, come back and remember the Pharisee, the cream of the crop, because even he failed when it came to earning God's acceptance. Let's not make the same mistake. Throw ourselves upon God's mercy, because that is the way that we can be brought into relationship with our Heavenly Father. Verse 14, I think, is looking forward to that promised day when Jesus will return to judge all of us. So let's make sure that actually we humble ourselves now, so that we may look forward to exaltation then, because pride now, really will lead to a humbling fall then.